call the April 12, 2019 meeting of the Arizona State Board of Optometry to order. Ms. Hollins, could you do a roll call, please?
Dr. Cassagus?
Here.
Dr. Pillar?
Here.
Dr. Moffett?
Here.
Dr. Lamb?
Here.
Dr. Jones?
Here.
Mr. Evanoff? Noted absent. Mona Baskin? Noted absent. Margaret Whalen?
Present.
Paula Hollins is here.
Thank you. President's report. I would like to defer a summary of House Bill 2569 to the Executive Director's report, so we can, you can add that later on. If you'd be so kind as to summarize that for us.
Thank you, I will.
Okay. We're going to move on to skip D and go to E, since Dr. Korluski's on the line. It's a review, discussion, and possible vote on opening a complaint for self-report pursuant to ARS 323208. Criminal charges, mandatory reporting requirements, civil penalty. Does anyone want to talk about this?
Well, it's a DUI.
That I think was reported, and I think he gave a pretty good summary of the things he went through afterwards. Sent us a full report as far as what he did.
Yeah.
Which I think is basically all we typically require.
As long as he completes the court's mandated stuff, he's okay, right?
I guess I would say,
that's what I would look at it.
Dr. Korluski, do you have anything to say to the board?
Well, I just want to apologize again, like I said in my letter. And I did complete all the court-ordered requirements. They gave me till August of this year, but I finished them as of last Monday.
There you go.
So. Thanks for that. Well, you were pretty diligent in doing over and above what just the court asked for, too. So we appreciate that. So do we even have to have... You don't have to have a negative motion, do we?
No, if the board doesn't want to do anything regarding opening a complaint, you can just move on.
We can thank the doctor for sending us in everything and
yes,
being as diligent as you were.
Yes, the reporting was on time.
Well, I appreciate your time.
No, thank you. Bye-bye.
I know.
Okay. Now we'll go back to D. Review, discussion, and possible action of investigative review complaints. John Riley, OD, IR number 201906. Would someone like to summarize?
I'll summarize. the patient's dad, RJG, is raising a complaint because Dr. Riley failed to release medical records regarding proposed treatment within a reasonable amount of time. The parents are divorced, but they have
shared custody,
well, and he has the right of refusal for treatment, as does his ex.
But they live in two different states.
The children had seen a pediatric ophthalmologist, 316 of 19, 212 of 19. The request was made by RJG to have the results of the exam and the proposed treatment sent to him so he could discuss it with the pediatric ophthalmologist. As far as 225-19,
we don't know.
Yeah, we don't know there's the outcome, but there certainly was enough time to at least release the records or give the records as requested. And Dr. Riley has never answered the question or summarized the events. All he did was send the records. So that's a summary.
Now you can say what you want.
Why didn't this guy send the records?
Well, no, he did. Well,
he tried.
But no,
through Target.
I want to say he sent the records to us.
No. Why did this guy send the records to the father?
That's a great question.
That's the question.
Right.
Or why didn't he send us a response?
Well, that's another question. There's no. He sent nothing. Just the records.
Well, it looks like they were sent and then returned.
That was to the father, though.
This Joy Perlusi, though, was, I guess, his office manager, and so you see her communications between her and the father.
Yeah, so at one point in time they were returned.
Yeah, she sent the records and they were returned, and I guess it was because of the Target carrier for their records, and then she shipped them again. But there's no, that was March 13th, and there was no indication from him that he actually received it.
Right, so.
And under the circumstances that, since that's what the complaint is, and we don't know that it was, also, looking at the records, I have a few questions about certain things, too. I think
when going from a constant esotropia to a constant exotropia.
Yeah, that was an error.
Yeah, and yeah, but DFE was consulted but declined every time. How do you not cite the plus six patient you see for the first time? I mean, I'm just asking a question. But, I think we need to, what do we do? We don't file a complaint, the complaint's filed. We need
yes.
to.
Mr. President, members of the board, what you can do is either issue a letter of concern for violation of AAC R421305 under record keeping for not providing the records within five business days when requested. I did email Dr. Riley asking for proof of the mailing, like the UPS receipt or something like that, and also the records because he hadn't sent either. So of course we only got the records back. If you want to speak with the doctor, you can invite him to an informal interview and just based on whatever facts you feel like you want to ask questions about.
I'm open to suggestion, but I would bring up, this isn't a motion, but I would bring up an informal interview.
Well, yeah, because first off, he needs to respond. And
well, that's the point, yeah.
And second off, did the guy get the records? And we don't know. Right. So, if you could, what?
Third point, his records.
Well,
that's why.
That's beyond, that's, but the guy should have sent the records. We should have gotten some sort of confirmation.
Well, especially when she specifically sent an email asking,
hey, what's up?
A confirmation.
He goes, I don't know. So, I don't know. Do you want to bring him in for this? Or do you want to, you can't ask him for anything else, right? You've done all you can do.
Well, I did email him, but we can, if you want to table it and ask staff to.
I think it would, get his attention more if
we brought him in.
Oh, I think so.
Because remember, at the informal interview, the board can still dismiss. And they can still issue a letter.
Yeah, just because we interview them doesn't mean or we have the informal.
It's not automatic disciplinary.
It makes the next meeting more fun.
Pardon?
Make the next meeting more fun.
Well, I don't know if I can say that on the mic on, but.
Well, let's bring him in.
Well, you need a motion.
I make a motion to go to an informal interview.
And we need a reason?
Yes, you need to state all the facts that you want to discuss with the doctor, or all the issues, excuse me, not the facts, but the issues.
But as far as statutes go, we can use the statute for the records that you mentioned.
Yes.
But we can also bring up whatever statute we have to look at for record keeping.
For record keeping, for failure to respond.
Failure to respond. So do we need to look up those numbers? Or do you know them by heart?
I do know some of them by heart, yes. So record keeping, which is in R421305, and then failure to respond, that's in statute.
And the...
And what else, Dr. Keller?
Not sending records to...
To the patient.
To the patient.
In a timely manner. And although there was a glitch, sent them again, did the guy ever get them? I don't know.
I've never had a glitch with FedEx or
well, she said there was an explanation in there, but it wasn't going to be a return.
You would respond.
I don't know this guy.
That initial.
God, I saw a paragraph.
Yeah, it's the board.
Cascades and freak out. But
right.
She was charged censoring more.
I know.
You respond and say, I sent them the records. They have them.
Yeah, I sent the records, they received them on this day. There's confirmation, I apologize.
Thank you very much.
There you go.
Okay.
Well, no, we're not done. She's still looking.
Okay. Well, you could have done that for her.
No, I couldn't, because I left my law book at home, because I thought we were getting new law, Margaret. Where's that at?
That will be in my director's report.
Oh, cannot wait.
Yeah, lighten up, Francis, you'll get there.
It's under ARS 32-1744.
So we have three ARSs in our motion?
Yes. Well, two administrative code and one statute.
Okay.
And a statute that permits us to go to informal interview, which is also 1744.
So after all that, could you reread the motion? That would be the second.
Dr. Peller moved to go to informal interview to discuss issues with Dr. Riley's record keeping, failure to
respond
to the board's request, failure to and for not sending records to the patient when requested pursuant to AACR 421-305.
There you go.
B305E.
Under discussion, the only thing I would add is, do we need to put the second doctor's name on there too? Because I think she saw the patient a few times.
Luce.
L-U-C-E. Yeah.
Do we?
I don't know. Because I don't know.
I
the complaint was.
That's a woman.
Daughter?
An optometrist in Dr. Luce, you said?
Yeah. But I mean, I think she saw even the daughter the first or the second time.
Do you want staff to subpoena those records from her, or because of the same office, is it going to be the
well,
same?
Well, we got them. I mean, they
but they were requesting Dr. Riley to send the records,
right.
Not Dr.
I Lee. See.
As far as the, but some of the.
and she wasn't named in the complaint.
Right, but I just didn't know if some of the things that we were seeing as far as record keeping were.
Hers are lacking a little bit.
Not his. Meaning, should we have both?
The board would need to open a new complaint if it's for her.
No, like I said, I didn't say anything.
No, okay.
Who seconded that motion, please? Dr. Jones?
Thank you. Okay,
so
any further discussion? No. All those in favor? Well, no, we don't do all those in favor of. We will do a roll call.
Thank you.
Dr. Jones?
Yes.
Okay. Dr. Lamb?
Aye.
I gotta go. Dr. Moffitt? And Dr. Peller?
Aye.
And I vote aye. So it's unanimous.
Thank you.
And we'll move on. Item F, review, discussion, and possible action on pending regular license applications. Ms. Hollins.
Mr. President, 3 and 4, will, if you decide to approve them, will be contingent upon a negative DPS report.
So they're complete outside of that?
Outside of that, correct.
I make a motion to accept pending a negative DPS report.
Second. Any discussion? We will do a roll call vote on this too. Dr. Jones?
Aye.
Dr. Lamb?
Aye, aye.
I guess you voted for Dr. Moffitt then? Dr. Moffitt?
Aye.
Dr. Peller?
Aye.
I vote aye. It's unanimous. Item G, review, discussion, and possible action on pending endorsement applications.
Mr. President, they are complete.
Okay.
I make a motion to accept items 5, 6, 7 for licensure.
Aye. I'll second.
Yeah, I have a second. Any discussion? Okay. Dr. Jones?
Aye.
Dr. Lamb?
Mm-hmm.
Dr. Moffitt?
Aye.
Dr. Peller?
Aye.
I vote aye. We are one unanimous group today. Okay. H, review, discussion, and possible action on approval of continuing education. It's Barnett Delaney dues review. Well, can we call Tucson? Find out what Dr. Luce thinks of this one. Any problems with it?
I didn't see anything.
No, there's enough.
I mean, I didn't see a quote-unquote PowerPoint, but I saw the outline, and I thought it was sufficient. That some people have higher standards than I do. Anybody have a problem with it? Okay, we need a motion.
I motion to approve the continuing education in item H.
H-A.
Okay.
We have a motion and a second. Any discussion?
Who seconded that?
Okay.
Thank you, Dr. Peller.
Dr. Jones?
Aye.
Okay. Dr. Lamb?
Aye.
Dr. Moffitt?
Aye.
Dr. Peller?
Aye.
And I vote aye. Another unanimous Okay, this was an interesting one. Review, discussion, and possible action on approval of testing center for proctoring of jurisprudence exam. And there were four listed here. I guess the question I would have is, like, I went into the Washington Park Library, and I was on their website, and it has something about proctoring tests, but when I went to go look at it, it just had a guy's email address there. I mean, are we doing anything wrong by saying, yeah, they have a, they have this, we don't know anything about it, but I'm assuming it's legit?
Mr. President, members of the board, that is a super small library. I also called, I check it out before I send it to you, and I did call the gentleman whose name was okay. on their testing center, and he said that he is the proctor for anybody who wants to. Yeah, they do actually quite a few because of where they are.
So it wouldn't happen to be that the Washington Park Library is where some of these rich people in California sent their kids to take PCT?
Not that I'm aware of.
Providence, Rhode Island.
Because the same was for the Salem, New Hampshire, that Kelly Library.
Yeah.
The gentleman who proctors is actually the reference desk guy, person. But he was very kind, and he said, I do proctor exams, so.
But I mean, we can't.
It's the jurisprudence, it's
not
the national.
We can't require people to have to come to Arizona to take the test. I just didn't know how much we needed to look into these to verify their existence.
I think it's kind of open, Dr. Chrysagas. I think if the board feels like there is an honest person who is going to proctor the exam and not allow for...
at least we're making an attempt.
Yes.
We approve them all the time. There's so many.
Would you like to share with us?
Questions?
Well, you know, we approve and approve and approve. Who made this request for Rhode Island? Some doctor?
Yes, one applicant did. And so what Paula and I do is we keep the list. So when others from the area call...
And you refer them to...
To the ones that have already been approved. And if they don't live near there, they either make the drive or they submit a new
place. Yeah, well, we used to have to fly here, but...
Well, that's why we changed it, because it's part of the governor's initiative of...
Yeah, I don't make it easy.
Yes.
Can I ask how many are... testing centers are there now? I mean, do we know
that we've approved?
That we've approved.
Wow.
Yes.
It's about 10.
So far we have 10, Dr. Jones. So this will be, it's starting to build, which is great.
Yeah,
and we always encourage applicants to use local optometry schools if they do.
A couple of the ones we did are huge.
Yeah, Pearson View, professional testing centers.
By doing them, we get some all over the country.
They don't all... accept our exam. That's some of the problem. I think some of the and there just aren't in some of the smaller areas any Pearson View
there
testing centers.
In Rhode Island, there's not one.
Mm-mm.
How weird.
So, I'm confident if it helps at all.
Okay.
I have looked into these and called around because if it seems really tiny, you know, if
you're
the board has some concern, I am.
I make a motion to accept these as testing centers.
Second.
Okay. Any more discussion? Mike, I know you have something more to say.
Well, no, I don't have any more to say. I mean, the ridiculousness that we're going to now, I mean, that's the governor's mandate, right? It ought to be convenient. They ought to be able to walk out their front door and take the test.
Right.
Because that's going to just keep getting crazier. And soon we'll have
as long as, we do our job, we just make sure that it's legitimate.
But how does Okay, Mark calls the guy up and says, oh yeah, it's legit. I mean, there's no vetting of these places, so anyway.
I think their goal is to move it towards online testing, actually, based on my interview.
Yes, yeah, Dr. Moffitt. I think, you know, the national boards has solicited our board prior. So, you know, we just haven't been able to give our exam to them, and it does need to be amended or changed first before we...
Yeah.
But that would be another option, but the only problem with that is, and it's really only for... kind of new graduates who are taking the national board, so what do you do about all the endorsement candidates? Because the NBEO is in North Carolina, if I recall correctly.
Yeah.
So this sort of helps alleviate, but we can do it online either way. I think that's something the board should definitely consider.
Why don't we give
it would require a rules change as well.
Oh, yeah.
But I'm okay with that. I am fine with that.
Well,
so.
We can, next time we do it, we can see if we can add that in.
Did we hire a test writer?
I have been unsuccessful in finding one.
Oh, maybe I should do it.
If you're interested, I would love that. Dr. Mock did some of the...
You want to get together and do it?
No.
It's definitely a special
These
skill. I think my writing
enough.
Skills are pretty decent.
I know, they are.
Test writing is
We're smart enough.
Is
you're
different.
Not going to get paid.
Yeah, because you're always drinking. So. Anyway, sorry.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. We had discussion. Let's have a vote on item I. Dr. Jones?
Aye.
Dr. Lamb?
Aye, laddie.
Dr. Moffitt?
Aye.
Dr. Peller?
Aye.
And I vote aye. So we can add four more to our list of testing centers.
Thank you.
Review discussion and possible approval of a lot of board meeting minutes. September of 18, December of 18, February of 19. I have one. I don't know if anyone else has any additions or corrections.
Yes, please.
Minutes of 12-14-18.
Okay.
Item I, there was a vote. And I think it said Dr. Lamb. There were two negatives. Dr. Lamb was one, and there was a Dr. Blank. And I don't know if it's because you forgot to put it in or didn't remember who it was, but I assumed that if we could bring that up, mm-hmm. we might remember who the negative vote
was. It's Dr. Jones.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm sorry about that. I think I forgot to put it in.
I made a note of that
also. Okay.
So now we can someone catch it. She was paying attention at the meeting. And
she just knows it wasn't her. Yeah. I appreciate that. Thank you.
It was my first meeting, so I just remember it really well.
So were there any other additions or corrections that were seen in any of the minutes? Okay. Could I have a motion, please?
I move we accept the minutes as presented.
Second.
With the friendly amendment.
With the friendly amendment regarding Dr. Jones.
Regarding item 13.
How about I put her in the things? Item 13, Dr. Jones.
Every time we vote, she's in the thing.
And I was not present at this September 22, so,
right, so
I'm not sure if it's appropriate.
You could abstain since they're...
Abstain from that.
Yeah.
So should we
yeah.
do one at a time?
That's up to you. She doesn't mind abstaining from all of them, or you can do them individually.
Well, let's do them individually.
All right.
So we're going to scrap your motion.
Are you withdrawing your motion, Dr. Lamb, since there was no second yet, was there?
No, I withdraw.
Did you second? Yes. Do you withdraw your second, Dr. Peller?
I withdraw my second.
Thank you.
Okay.
Go ahead.
I'd like to do another one.
Which one are we doing?
Do 12.
Individually, please, Dr. Lamb.
All right, I move we accept September 22nd, 2018 regular minutes. Is that the one with the correction?
No.
Okay. No.
As presented.
Okay. We already had discussion, so now we'll have the vote.
Is there a second to
that? Oh, yeah. Okay, Dr. Jones.
Aye.
Dr. Lamb.
Aye, aye, aye.
Dr. Moffitt.
Abstain.
There you go. Dr. Peller.
Aye.
And I vote aye. Now, I think you could put 13 and 14 together into one with the...
Okay, with the friendly amendment.
Yes.
Okay, move December 14, 2018, February 22nd, 2019, with our friendly amendment... or acceptance as minutes to the regular meeting.
Right. There we go. All those, I got so used to saying all those in favor. Dr. Jones.
Aye.
Dr. Lamb.
Uh-huh.
Dr. Moffitt.
Aye.
Dr. Peller.
Aye.
And I vote aye. Thank you very much. And as you all know, this is my favorite part of the meeting. Item K, the Executive Director's Report.
Do we have popcorn for this?
I'm sorry, I should have brought some. You're gonna need it.
You're on. Let's
thank
got
you.
Pretty good agenda here. So.
Thank you, Mr. President, members of the board. Item K-15, the closed complaint for IR number 2019-05. That was the patient from the last meeting who was expecting the refund. I did receive a call. She has received the refund and is pleased with the outcome of the complaint. So
okay.
That's a done deal. And Dr. Lamb, I think you were really worried about that. So.
Well, I just wanted to do it differently.
Rightfully so, and
the
I appreciated
board does
that.
What the board does,
so. So that was a good outcome. The 1-800 contacts complaints, the update on formal hearing for IR number 2017-223. I was going to defer to board counsel. The materials have been given to Ms. Baskin. She has been out of the office for quite some weeks. So I'm expecting that upon her return, she will get the formal hearing on the next possible board meeting. It requires a 30-day notice to the doctor. So whenever she's back, so I expect probably in June or July that we could hear this formal hearing.
Like, is she at an extended farm meeting, or is she okay?
Yes, she's out.
So the farm she's out?
Yes, extended farm meeting. So I apologize for the length of time that it's taking, but the state has given its information to the Attorney General's office. So we're just waiting on them because we'll be represented by the Solicitor General's office. So whenever Ms. Baskin has time to get her case ready, it'll be heard. The budget update, number K-17. As of March 31st, 2019, 75% of the fiscal year has elapsed. Remember, our fiscal year ends June 30th. The board's spending is at 68.41%. Our beginning cash balance is $314,109.60, with an ending cash balance of $304,917.78. Item K-18, the rules package update. As you recall, our rules went to the Governor's Regulatory Review Council, or GRC, in December. They were approved. We submitted our notice of final rulemaking to the Secretary of State's office. It was published in early March, and the rules went into effect April 5th. So I do have the new rules on the website and in our current rule book, but I'm waiting for the session to end before I print new books for everybody. So I'll have new statutes and rules books for you that are updated. Yes, Dr. Lamb?
Well, I guess it doesn't matter.
Is it directly related to what I'm talking about?
It was, but that's okay. Go ahead.
Okay. So that's why I didn't bring updated rules books today, because I didn't want to print twice, because I'm going to do the ones that are kind of like this, like the
bottom. How often do we update rules? Just
as needed. There is a rules moratorium, so whenever we do them now, we have to meet the exceptions that are in the executive order, set forth by the governor. So we amended them recently because there was the change in law for the opioid CE requirements, so we had to amend our rule.
And so you said if we start testing online, we have to do a rules amendment for that too.
We would, and I think we could squeeze it in there under the exceptions, because like Dr. Moffitt was saying, it makes it more user-friendly and easier for people to go online and take the exam, so I don't think the governor's office could argue that we're impeding.
What about widespread cheating? We don't control that, do we?
We don't, and that's why we are looking at all these testing centers, but we have to understand, too, that, I mean, the jurisprudence exam, a lot of states have open book. So we could also change how we do the exam. Sometimes open book to me is a little more challenging than a closed book test, but it is the statutes and rules. So I think if an applicant isn't reviewing them, it hurts them in their practice. So hopefully, we have had a lot of people failing it, I will say that. So I think people really aren't studying. They just kind of come thinking it's gonna be, but of course there's no practical portion to it. So when they get here, it's all statutes and rules. They are outdated. I mean, I admit some of the questions are outdated, and they might seem like there's more than one correct answer. We've had that allegation recently. So the test definitely needs to be updated. So if anybody knows a test writer, I really have been looking, but apparently it's a super specialized skill. We used to have a government university that would do that, but they're defunct now, so we don't have.
And this may be a bad suggestion, so would we want to get Midwestern University involved with that, or no?
I already solicited them, and they didn't have any.
I know, but we could get some of those, professors to consult.
Maybe there's someone there now who would do it.
And all, the ones that do the opioid classes.
Okay. I mean, I'll take that under advisement.
Well, I mean, I don't know. Maybe that's a bad idea to get.
It's not a bad idea. I mean, I don't know why it would be. They would keep it confidential, just like anybody else.
You necessarily need a professor to do it, but you need someone that's proficient in the law, not necessarily.
Right.
On a
day-to-day basis. Right. The NBEO update, they actually sent this at the beginning of the year. I just didn't report on it at the February meeting because we were telephonic, and it's kind of hard to hear sometimes over the phone. But they've had four substantial changes to the national boards. They are offering a newly developed laser and surgical procedures exam, the LPSE. So that'll be available. It's a standalone elective exam offered to applicants. Of course, Arizona doesn't have that, so if someone thinks they're going to apply here, they may not take that. But so you may start seeing that. Well, you don't see the scores anymore, but.
Could you repeat what that stands for, the LPS?
Sure. It's the Laser and Surgical Procedures Examination. It's a standalone test. And it's offered to only fourth-year students, residents, and current practitioners. There is NBEO board certification. As you know, we've been having the issue of board certified versus MBEO board certified. There was some confusion because MBEO started using that term, but to the profession or to the medical profession, board certified means something else. So they're offering a voluntary MBEO board certification program. They're discontinuing it, that's right, because they didn't have enough participation, because I think a bunch of people took it in the beginning, and then when there was the confusion over the term board certification, people thought maybe it wasn't worth getting because it wasn't the actual board certification. So, they're discontinuing the board certification. The NBEO is restructuring Part 3, the clinical skills exam, to ensure the most up-to-date, comprehensive, and contemporary optometric exams. NBEO is restructuring Part 3. More information will be coming later in the year. I think that is set to either come out this summer or early fall, whatever the restructuring is. We'll hear about it at the ARBO conference this summer. And starting August 1st of this year, there is a 6-time limit for each exam.
6 times? And then
yes, so if the applicant fails more than 6 times in one part, they will offer an appeals process requiring submission of a remediation plan for individuals who wish to appeal the 6-time limit. I know that's something our board has kind of discussed in the past, just random discussion, you know, like how many times do we want to accept someone who fails a certain part of the exam?
How is that?
It's not right.
Limited?
Yeah. Well, you took it 6 times, you're all. You're never going to be an optometrist. You spend your whole life trying to be an optometrist, you can't pass any national boards. And, you know, I failed Part 1 of the national boards because I didn't even study, and then I got whacked on ophthalmic optics, geometric optics or something. Had a really low score, so I had to retake it. I took it seriously next time. But I don't see how you could do that. It's like what we used to do here in Arizona. You're from here, you come here, you want a license. We used to give the test one time. You failed, you had to wait a year to take the test again. It's the same concept. Maybe they go back to school. Maybe they
Dr. Lamb, if it makes you feel any better, the national boards, and we've heard about this at the ARBO conference every summer, they offer assistance for students who do fail, and so they always...
We're in North Carolina?
Well, in North Carolina,
yeah,
yes.
So they got to fly to North Carolina, pay the...
But they offer, but it's cool because, so they showed us at the ARBO conference, pretty much every year, but especially last year we saw, a student who had failed a portion of the exam, and when they had the remedial studies... they scored, I don't remember what percent, it was like a substantial number of points higher the second time they took it. It's about confidence and competence when you're talking about the public. I mean, are you confident in your doctor who had to take their national boards 10 times? I mean, that's, I think, the angle that they were looking at. As a practitioner, you might not see that because you feel like I should be able to take as many times as I need, and I definitely understand that side also, but from our perspective, I think from the public protection standpoint, as a consumer, as a patient, it might speak to, you know, maybe the competence.
Think 6 times is fair. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so.
If you can't pass it 6 times.
You're not going to.
The legislation update.
Where's my bill? I forgot.
I have it right here.
Okay.
So the 54th legislature is in the first regular session. It began Monday, January 14th of this year. As of day 50, which was April 10th, there were 1,289 bills introduced, 745 in the House and 544 in the Senate. The bill status for Senate Bill 1096, health professionals data, repository appropriation, that was transmitted to the House. It only had a second read in the House on February 22nd, so I don't see that bill going anywhere. Senate Bill 1086, health professions temporary licensure, that bill was transferred to the House. It went to majority caucus on April 2nd, but I also don't see that bill getting through the House this late. So I believe the last day to hear bills is either this week or next. It's either today or it's next Friday. Senate Bill 1103, the Pharmacy Board Authority modifications. That was about opioid control and giving powers and duties to the pharmacy board to further control the opioid issue. That Senate bill was transferred to the House on March 4th. It went to caucus on April 9th, but it hasn't gone anywhere since.
On that note, even though it's not part of that legislation, that thing I sent you about the opioids, did you ever get a response from them?
Mm-mm.
About reporting?
No.
Okay.
Senate Bill 1108, yes, Dr.
I didn't mean to interrupt you, but did we skip over Senate Bill 1123?
Oh, yeah, I have them. They're not in the same order. Sorry, Dr. Peller. I think I added that at the end.
Oh, God, I didn't mean to.
I mean, it's on my list. Do you
That's
mind if
fine.
I just...
No, no.
I realized that I didn't put them in the same order because I was...
That's fine.
Okay, excuse me. Senate Bill 1108 is also House Bill 2075. They just merged the two, so it's really House Bill 2075. That's the electronic prescribing exceptions and deadlines, and that was an emergency measure that would extend the deadline for compliance with the electronic prescribing requirements. That went to committee the whole in the House on February 6th and hasn't gone anywhere since then. So
is that only the electronic prescribing for opioids, or is that?
It's for all the narcotics.
Okay.
Senate Bill 1105, direct primary care agreements. This would repeal requirements related to direct primary care provider plans and prescribe requirements for direct primary care agreements. It was transferred to the House. It went through the Senate, but it only had a third read in the House as of April 10th. So I can't imagine that bill's also going to go anywhere. Senate Bill 1029, qualifying physicians, opioid-dependent patients. That bill was transferred to the House on February 2nd. It went to caucus on April 2nd and hasn't moved since then. And that actually specifically affected, it required the Arizona Medical Board and the Osteopathic Board to determine if a licensed physician demonstrates the training or experience necessary to qualify for federal registration to dispense narcotics. So.
To determine our? The MD and the DO board determine the ODs?
No.
Oh, okay.
Just for those two boards.
Okay, I got it.
House Bill 2075, which I just talked about, so the Senate bill didn't go anywhere because, of course, they ended up merging it. It actually was signed by Governor Ducey and had an emergency chapter assignment. So that one allows Arizona Regulatory Board of Physician Assistants to certify PAs for 30-day prescription privileges for Schedules 2, 3, 4, and 5, which I thought was interesting because they currently don't have any prescribing. And control substances that are opioids or benzodiazepine for 90-day prescription privileges. Also for Schedules 4 and 5, controlled substances that are not opioids. It does limit their certification for prescribing privileges, clarifies that a prescription for Schedule 3 rather than Schedule 2 controlled substance is not refillable without permission of the supervising physician. It basically eliminated the supervision of the PAs like it currently is and allowed them to have prescribing authority so that you know, it's better co-management of the patient.
Who's that bill at?
That's House Bill 2075.
Is it?
Oh, it was signed by the governor.
Oh, it was signed?
Yes, yes. House Bill 2118, unauthorized practice, health professions. That would require a health professional regulatory board to regulate the unauthorized practice of the health profession in which we regulate, so basically unlicensed activity. That was transferred to the Senate on March 12th. It went to committee of the whole on April 4th, but it hasn't moved since then. House Bill 2231, non-health professions, occupations, and regulations. I didn't understand this bill, so it hasn't gone anywhere, thankfully, because I didn't know what they were trying to get at, but it just said it makes various changes relating to the requirements and criteria for regulating non-health professions and occupations. So that's when we get into like the hair braiders and the tattoo artists and the people like that. It had a third read in the House and didn't even get anywhere else in the House, so it never was transferred to the Senate. House Bill 2463 was signed by Governor Ducey on March 22nd. That is occupational regulations, licenses, communications notice. That requires an agency to display in multiple locations a specific notice regarding occupational regulations. We have to post a notice stating that occupational regulations are limited to those that are necessary to fulfill a public health, safety, or welfare concern, and individuals have the right to petition an agency to repeal or modify an occupational regulation or bring an action in court of general jurisdiction to challenge an occupational regulation. It also requires the notice to be posted on the agency's website and printed on all the following: a license application, a communication denying a license, a cease and desist order, or any other communication asserting that the person is required to obtain a license. So again, this is part of the governor's initiative. He feels like we have to fight to license our profession, so to speak. I mean, it's kind of a very general, crass way to say it, but that's kind of what he's saying. Like, we have to defend why we think we should be licensed. So if someone out there says, well, I could be an optometrist, I grew up looking at people's eyes, they could theoretically petition the agency to repeal our any of our statutes, like regarding scope of practice and things like that. And that was signed by the governor, so that's in law. House Bill 2519, Physician's Assistance, Physician Relationship, that was transferred to the Senate, 226, went to the Committee of the Whole on March 27th. And all that did was add, instead of supervision, they're calling it collaboration between the PA and the physician. House Bill 2113, Direct Primary Care Providers, dentists. They were going to include dentists as primary care providers. It was transferred to the Senate and had a second read on March 4th, but it hasn't gone anywhere. So I think dentists are still not going to be considered primary care physicians. House Bill 2068, Clinical Nurse Specialist Prescribing Authority, that was transferred to the Senate on March 4th and sent back to the House for its final journey on April 4th. So I'm not sure if that one will squeeze in. Sometimes they hold those big bills and then they shove it through at the last second just to make sure it passes. This would allow a clinical nurse specialist, a CNS, to prescribe and dispense pharmacological agents if the CNS has met educational training requirements and holds a national certification. So I'm not sure where in the hierarchy that is, because I know there's CNAs, there's patient care technicians, there's nurse practitioners who have the highest scope, there's RNs, so I apologize, I'm not sure where the CNS falls in there. Yeah. House Bill 2058, Dental Hygienist Scope of Practice, basically just expanded the general scope of practice for dental hygienists. It would allow them to practice in an inpatient hospital setting under the general supervision of a licensed physician, who's available for consultation, whether or not they're present at the hospital. It would permit an affiliated practice agreement between a dental hygienist and a dentist. It would allow them to supervise dental assistants and allow the dental assistant under the direct supervision of an affiliated practice dental hygienist to expose radiographs for dental diagnostic purposes and polish the natural restored surfaces of the teeth. That bill did not pass, but I kind of equated to like our optometric technicians. It could be something similar, although hygienists are licensed through their board. That was transferred to the Senate on February 11th and went to the Committee of the Whole on March 27th, but hasn't had any movement since. So I don't see their scope expanding this year. Senate Bill 1123, Nursing Board Rules on Abortion. It had a second read in the Senate on January 23rd and has not gone anywhere. That bill simply would have amended the powers and duties of the board and reworded their rule. They do already have that in their rule, so I'm not really sure what the purpose was to rewrite their rule. Senate Bill 1475, that is the one you were asking about at the last meeting, Dr. Lamb, the DNA identification database. That had a second read on February 6th. I think that bill is dead. It actually only affected Title 41. It did not affect our fingerprinting law that we have, so we wouldn't have been. That one actually is for requiring the Arizona Department of Public Safety to establish a database to retain DNA ID collected from sexual assault kits and establish a process that requires the DNA to be analyzed using rapid DNA identification.
But that died.
It is, yeah, it died. Basically, it was for persons currently required to, by law, to submit DNA include but are not limited to persons convicted of a felony offense, convicted of homicide, sexual abuse, or exploitation of a child, or other serious dangerous offenses as outlined in statutes. So that was not a regulatory. I know you saw the word fingerprinting and DNA and all that, but we have our own fingerprinting law. The House Bill 2569 that was deferred to me by Mr. President during his president's report, that is the occupational licensing and reciprocity that was signed by Governor Ducey on the 10th of April, so just a couple days ago. The purpose of that was to establish reciprocity for occupational and professional license or certificate holders with exceptions. This bill actually replaced the current military spousal reciprocity that was passed into law 5 years ago. I think it affects 414301, ARS 414301. Because we haven't had reciprocity in like 20 years. Remember, if you were here, we changed it to endorsement. I did send a friendly amendment over suggesting that it not be called reciprocity because that implies an equal exchange, which none of us have. Not just the optometry board, but several of the other regulatory boards just don't have reciprocity because of our scopes of practice being different. As you can see, it's still called reciprocity, but the intent of the law is to make it quicker and easier for someone coming in to Arizona, kind of not by choice, like if they are a military spouse and they had to move with their spouse who was reassigned.
They still need to take jurisprudence?
They do. So let's see. Current statute requires licenses or certificates issued pursuant to Title 32, which we are, to be issued without exam to the spouse of an active duty military member if the person holds a license or certificate in another state.
Equal licensure?
It is equal.
Okay.
That was also the other friendly amendment that I sent over to Senator Brophy-McGee. The provisions are, it requires an occupational or professional license or certificate to be issued in the discipline applied for and at the same practice level as determined by the regulating entity to a person who establishes residence in Arizona. I think that was the big part, was establishing residence here. They just have to establish residence for 1 year, and then it sort of waives the 4 out of the last 5 year requirement that we have for endorsement, because I think the governor had a real problem, A, understanding that, and B, agreeing with it. I think he didn't like that a lot of the boards had a similar requirement making someone wait, although they could always apply as a, you know, regular applicant if they didn't meet that requirement. So it exempts from out-of-state reciprocity the following: a license or registration certificate issued for private investigators and security guards, so they're not included. Requirements for a fingerprint clearance card. Criteria for a license, permit, or certificate of eligibility established by an interstate compact. We haven't had that in a long time, but I know the nursing board has that, and I think the medical board has an interstate compact also. The ability of regulating an entity under Title 32 to require an applicant to submit fingerprints to access state and federal criminal records for non-criminal justice purposes adds to licensure requirements a condition that a person does not have a disqualifying criminal history as determined by the regulating entity. Subjects the person licensed pursuant to Title 32 to the laws regulating the person's practice in Arizona and to the regulating entity's jurisdiction. Specifies that a reciprocal license or certificate is valid only in Arizona and does not make the license holder eligible to be part of an interstate compact. Allows a regulating entity under Title 32 to determine eligibility for an applicant to be reciprocally licensed or certified if the applicant is not part of an interstate compact. It also removes the option for a regulating entity to require a military spouse who has been licensed or certified for fewer than 5 years to practice under the direct supervision of a licensee or certificate holder in the practice area in Arizona. That's a big one, not for us because we don't have that requirement. You're either licensed or you're not. We don't have the provisional, temporary, or other. Where you can practice under, you know, direct supervision, but that hurt a lot of boards because they have that requirement for a reason, especially behavioral health, behavioral analysts. They have social workers, a lot of people that do need to practice under the supervision of a licensee. So it allows regulating entity that administers an exam of Arizona law as part of its license or certificate application to require an applicant to take and pass the exam specific to Arizona law. So it's kind of similar to our endorsement law, but it has a few quirks in it. In my mind, this is only related to, again, the military spouses. Some of my colleagues disagree, so I don't think this is going to supersede our endorsement law at all. And they have to have active orders because we have all of our military laws in place, and we definitely respect those, and we've utilized them over the years. We had some applicants who are actively serving who get their CE time frame waived and things like that under the military law. So. I just was kind of irked by that law because it's a little bit short-sighted, I think, professionally speaking. No disrespect to what the governor is trying to do, but I just think it should have been probably written a little bit differently. And reciprocity is an old term. In fact, there's some boards that still have comity, which I still am not entirely sure what that is. But comity was, C-O-M-I-T-Y, comity was there, and then reciprocity came, and then endorsement. So this is, to me, a little bit of a step back because, again, we haven't used reciprocity in about 20 years. So that concludes my legislative portion of my director's report. Are there any future agenda items that you would like to see on the next board meeting?
I have one.
Yes, please.
Elections.
Oh, yes. Those will be on the June board meeting.
Just say it.
Okay.
So start making up your signs if you're running.
Yes. Is there any other agenda items that you would like to see on the next agenda? Future board meeting dates. If the board would like to meet in May, we have like how many applications do we have open?
What is it usually the?
So we have 5 applications that are pending, who weren't ready for the meeting today. If the board would entertain maybe.
How long?
Pardon?
We have how long to process
those? 75 days total from beginning. So if the board would entertain perhaps a teleconference meeting in May, just probably for applications unless I get a complaint in. The ARBO conference is in June on the 16th, I believe, whatever that Sunday is. Are we inviting someone else to go to the ARBO conference, or are you going?
If someone would like to go, yeah.
The ARBO conference is Sunday. It's half a day Sunday, all day Monday, and half a day on that Tuesday.
And then the AZOA meeting starts on Wednesday.
Right, and then the AOA conference is immediately following that.
AOA.
So, Dr. Keller, if you're interested. Dr. Chrysagas cannot attend, if I recall correctly. Yeah. So.
Wait, it's in June?
Yeah, it's a week earlier than normal. So whatever that Sunday is, it's either the 16th or the 17th.
Can I check with my schedule?
Of course.
No,
the 16th of June? That's Father's
Day. Is that a Sunday?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's Father's Day.
Yes.
It's always on Father's Day.
Yeah.
Where is it?
It's in St. Louis, Missouri this year. It moves around the country. So wherever the AOA is, ARBO piggybacks on to their conference. So that conference is first. And then if you want to attend the AOA, you can. The board can usually pay for a little bit of the conference for the AOA.
I have something to go to. I mean, after that, I don't have a problem with the teleconference in May, or if we have to meet because you have some complaints. Like, I don't know if anything's going to happen with the one we talked about today. Would that possibly
the informal?
The
informal will just be whenever we meet in person next.
Okay.
So if it gets pushed out to July,
but could it theoretically be in place by? Is the time limit within where it could be in May if we wanted it to be?
No.
Okay, so it wouldn't happen. The earliest it would happen would be June anyway.
Correct.
Okay. Is June when we get our biggest influx of apps, or is it July typically?
It's usually ends up being July because I think it's so late in June when the new graduates come out.
Okay.
Ms. Hollins and I are testing the jurisprudence exam at Midwestern University on May 29th. So, but I think the school doesn't graduate until June 8th or 10th, something like that.
The only reason I say that is because I will not be in town on the 14th. It was something that I couldn't.
Right, of June?
Yeah, so if we wanted to have a meeting in June.
Well, usually we do it the following week because of the ARBO conference, but.
But if we could move it a week before or a week after, but you already said week after wouldn't work. Well, the week after would work.
Well, we might not have Ms. Baskin because she has cosmetology, her other board. That's why we had to move to the second Friday.
Okay.
But that being said,
is that the AOA meeting on the June 21st, that weekend?
That would be the AOA meeting.
Because I might be going to that.
Well, we can do a teleconference next month, which I can just email the board a date. It doesn't have to be the regular scheduled day. We could do a Wednesday lunchtime if that's doable for people, that kind of thing. No?
Really, it's that hard for me.
Okay, what is your...
So on Wednesdays and Thursdays and even Mondays, I work straight through.
Okay, so Tuesday and Friday are
Tuesday
better?
Tuesday and Friday are better days just for me. I can be much more.
Okay. Tuesday and Friday. I mean, that's fine with me. I don't mind doing it on a Friday still. I just sometimes when we do the teleconference, it seems better during the week. Can I email the board a couple of dates like I usually do and just say,
sure.
You know, do we have a quorum for any of these dates? So I'll do that for the May board meeting. We'll just do a teleconference, and then we can try and figure out, because it sounds like we might not meet until either very late in June, like June/July.
Maybe
just do the July, because I know the first, the second Friday in July, that's not the week of the 4th, right? I think it's the 10th or something like that, so we should be okay.
The 12th.
The 12th? Okay. So let's tentatively plan the May board meeting will be teleconference, and then July 12th.
And no June meeting?
No June, most likely. I know the applicants, the new students will be...
As long as we're not putting them, delaying them much. But
we'll have to see.
They're not graduating until the middle of, beginning
yeah.
of June anyway.
What I might do, if that's the case, Dr. Krasagas, is do another teleconference for applications only, how we've done that in the past,
okay.
Somewhere in June. And then we'll have the regular July 12th meeting, which will have hopefully the formal hearing for 1-800 contacts, and also the informal for
okay.
Dr. Riley.
Bring your lunch on that one.
What day was that going to be?
That was the 12th of July.
So July 12th will be a regular in-person meeting, and then we may do teleconference for May and June. But of course, I will always communicate with you thoroughly, and several emails will be sent to pick some dates for those.
And if I have to drive somewhere to do the teleconference, I will get my mileage.
Yes.
Where are you going?
I'm going to drive from my bedroom to my office. So, how about my 37 cents?
And then Dr. Peller, you're going to let me know if you want to attend. I just need to know if you're not. If nobody is, that's okay. I just need to know if I need to register myself as the voting delegate for Arizona, or normally it's the OD. So.
What's entailed in going to the ARVO conference?
It's really exciting. You've got to go.
The ARVO conference is like a supporting association for the regulatory boards. It's kind of a quasi-association, because normally the associations promote the profession, but ARVO promotes the public protection aspect of the boards. And at every meeting, they just kind of have current goings-on in the optometry profession, as well as regulation. That's always a big portion. We have a presentation from the NBEO, kind of how their testing is going and what changes there have been. I can't remember how many members are on the ARBO board. I think there's 5 members on their board. And then they have a member board executive committee. I'm co-chair of my colleague collegial committee. But we actually earned a spot on the ARBO board, so now there will be an executive director on the ARBO board that was voted at the last session last year. What am I missing?
Well,
we do breakout sessions where we talk about.
Yeah, I went 2 or 3. But,
yeah.
But the personally, I think it's a worthwhile thing if you're going to be on the board for a while, because you really learn the regulatory aspect of what we do. You don't talk much about optometry per se, but it's all about protecting the patient and looking at it from the regulatory side of point of view. As Dr. Lamb was kindly trying to say, it's a rather dry conference, but you do learn a lot just by sitting there watching how to do it from that aspect, from the regulatory aspect. And then the other part is, obviously, when you get out and you get to go out to dinner with Margaret and her friends.
I was just saying that. That's the best
that's
part.
That's the highlight.
The best part is you sit with her during the meeting, and then
yeah.
you get to go out drinking with her.
Yeah, she keeps you awake during the meeting, and then at night you get to go out with Margaret and her ED friends. Executive director friends. I thought it was good, and then so both times I did it, I stayed for
a
couple of days of AOA.
Mm-hmm.
If you're going, you should probably stay.
And like I said, the conference has changed this year, so it's only a half a day on Sunday. It used to be a whole day, but apparently that was too much. I kind of feel like it's not worth the cost anymore with that short of a conference, but FARB is better. We should go to FARB. That's the Federation of Association of Regulatory Boards.
But, where's that at?
That also moves around. That one's in the winter. That one's in January. So.
And probably like in Cleveland.
Yeah.
In January.
That concludes my executive director's report, Mr. President.
Thank you very much. Before I go to the call to the public,
There's something I'm supposed to read at the beginning of the meeting that I forgot because I've got this pile of stuff here. So is it your opinion that I should read it now?
Yes,
or should
please.
We skip it this month?
I would appreciate that.
Okay. It's the board meeting statement of purpose. I want you all to pay attention, even though we're done with the meeting. A license to practice optometry in this state is a privilege granted by the Arizona legislature through the Optometric Practice Act. I haven't memorized this yet. In 1907, on behalf of the people of the state, the legislature created the Arizona State Board of Optometry to regulate the practice of the profession of optometry, issue licensure where appropriate, and in general assure the public that the practice of optometry will be conducted with reasonable skill and safety by persons who meet the curriculum requirements to hold a Doctor of Optometry degree from an accredited optometry school. That is a long sentence. That is a paragraph of a sentence. To enforce the Optometric Practice Act, the board reviews applications for licensure and complaints relative to the conduct of its licensed optometrist and is charged with determining if the provisions of the Optometric Practice Act are met. In addition, the board may promulgate rules and policies in conformity with the stated purposes of the board and the mission as mandated by law. As of January 1st, 2019, all board meetings are digitally recorded with the recordings of the audio available to the public on the board's website under the consumer information link. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Dr. Prasagas.
Call to the public.
I'm just going to speak from here if that's okay.
That's fine.
Sure. I'm Tom Galvin, an attorney with Rose Law Group on behalf of our client 1-800-CONTACTS, and we just want to say thank you to Executive Director Ms. Whalen for the information on agenda item number 16. Why I was asked to be here today, and thank you for providing that update, and we look forward to hearing more, and it looks like it will probably be heard in July.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any more business? And I will take a motion to adjourn.
I make such a motion to adjourn.
Second.
A motion and a second. All those in favor? I can do this. Do I have to do a roll on this, too?
I don't think you need a motion to adjourn, do you?
Well,
yes.
Dr. Jones.
Don't we decide
Aye.
That?
Dr. Mann.
Oh, we didn't need a roll call.
Yeah, that we didn't.
Dr. Moffitt.
Aye.
Dr. Peller.
Aye.
And I vote aye to adjourn at 10:02.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.